you have a meeting between when I last saw you a few minutes ago?
No, I have one.
I'm going to apologize up front for my voice, but I should be speaking the least amount today, so others will pick up for that. So I'll call this meeting of the Early Childhood and Family Supports Committee to order for Tuesday, February 6, 2018. We have a couple of items before we start the actual hearings. The first is the organizational meeting, where we have to adopt the committee rules. I assume the committee rules are the same rules we adopt for all of our committees, and historically are nothing has changed.
No, they're the same.
Okay. So, Representative Bonham, are you going to make the motion?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Very much.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Lively, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 6, 2018.
Representative Bonham moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 6, 2018. Is there any discussion regarding the rules? Any objection? Okay, if not, the clerk will please call the roll.
Here.
Are you in favor of the rules?
They got me one time on that, too.
Yes or no? Do you approve the rules?
Oh.
Sorry.
Yes.
I forgot to warn you. You're first.
You get that chance next.
Been there.
Bynum is happy.
Alphabetically, you had warned me during
It actually takes
days.
A lot to embarrass and me, and I'm all warm now.
Yeah, that's right.
L before N.
She was there last year.
Yeah. Where are we at?
The proper answer is aye or nay, no?
Yes.
Okay.
Or yes.
Aye.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
No. Representative Bowles?
Aye.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Excused.
Representative Kennegeier?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brocksmith?
Excused.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Excused.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Is that everybody? Okay. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, now we get the chance for everybody to introduce themselves. Some are continuing members on this committee, and we have a couple of new committee members. And so why don't we start down here, clear the
Representative Bowles,
please.
I'm Denise Bowles. I was appointed and sworn in on the 26th of January, and I represent House District 19, which is South Salem, East Salem, rural Almsville-Turner. And I have lived in this community most of my life. I'm very passionate about community and making good government. I am the mother of three teenagers, so I say that's my superpower. And I'm really excited to be part of this committee.
Thank you. I'm Representative Sherry Malmstrom. I represent House District 27, which is Southwest Portland and Beaverton area. I'm a mother of three now grown sons, and I had a very long career time of being a public health nurse specializing in maternal child health.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Kennegeier. I'm Alyssa. Melissa. I represent House District 46, which is parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland. I also have three children, and as I look down here, I'm like, I think there's multiple children in each of our committee members. So that's interesting. Longtime supporter of early childhood and family support. My superpower comes from having survived the teenage years.
Yay.
My kids are all in their 20s. Really delighted to be here. I'm very passionate about this issue.
Representative Daniel Bonham from House District 59. I live in the Dalles. My wife, Lori, and I have two children. And got a sophomore in college now and a junior in high school. So I don't know if I have any superpowers, but my wife, I believe my wife does. That said, early child development is new to me, and I'm super excited about being a part of this group and eager to move forward and represent my district.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
So, Representative Brocksmith, can we come on this side?
Sure. Away? I appreciate that. Thank you. I don't know if I'll give you my superpower, but I'm with Representative Bonham. My wife has the superpowers, not me. I'm Representative David Brock Smith from House District 1, which incorporates pretty much all of Southwest Oregon from Coos Bay to the California border over to West Cave Junction and then back up I-5 through to West Roseburg. I spent a number of years on the school board, almost 8 years on the school board for Porterford Langlois School District, which is the 8th most impoverished school district in the nation, and have four stepchildren ranging from 13 to 5. And so I'm a firm believer that if we can do whatever we can with our children early on, they'll become better adults. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm here.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Janelle Bynum. I proudly represent House District 51, North Clackamas, Damascus, Gresham, Boring, East Portland, and Happy Valley. I am the mom of four, Christine, Ellis, Caroline, and Asa. I always name them because they are important to me. And it also, since they're, the oldest is 16, that means I've been purchasing childcare for 16 years now. And I believe that it's helped me become a better mom. It has allowed me to pursue my career. But I also believe that those people have had a strong impact on my children's lives. And so I believe in high quality childcare for a variety of reasons. And I know that that's a barrier for a lot of families engaging in the workforce. So my superpower has been surviving driver training with the 16-year-old. And I'll give one last plug. I'm still carrying it around. One last quick plug. She got her registration for her voter ID, for her voter's card, so in 2 years, so she'll be ready to go. So I'm going to, if I slip out of this meeting in the at the end of it, actually, I'll go drop it off at the Secretary of State's office.
Very good. And my name is John Lively. I'm State Representative from District 12, which is essentially the city of Springfield. I have two grown daughters, seven grandchildren in ages from third grade to a freshman in high school. But more importantly, I have two great nephews who are just starting through. It's hard to tell that I could be old enough to have two great nephews, but I do have, of course, a lot of other great nephews and nieces. But this is early childhood is something I've worked on for 25 or 30 years now, starting in Lane County, something I feel very passionate about. And I appreciate all of you here that feel just as passionate about the work that we're doing here. And we look forward to continuing to work with you as we make progress in our state and making this system work. And Chris, you're new to the committee.
I am. my name's Chris Reinhardt. I'm the LPRO analyst assigned to the committee.
And who are you?
Corey Rosenberg, committee assistant.
Thank you. Okay. So we have two hearings scheduled today, just so people understand. Given this is a short session, we have two meetings this week. And during those meetings, we'll have all the have the hearings, and or if paperwork and that's ready to move things, we'll try to have work sessions to move it. Nothing at this point today is ready to be able to move, but we'll always advertise. And as long as we can have the hearings this week, as long as they're scheduled. So if we reach Thursday and there's bills and that, as long as we've scheduled them on Thursday for a work session, then we can have work sessions next week to complete the paperwork. But we're going to try to get the hearings and as much as the work done this week in case there's other amendments or other information that we need to be able to move the bill. So that's the process that we'll be following. So we're ready to go. Okay. I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 4065. And Chris, would you like to summarize that for us, sure, please?
Chair Lively, members of the committee. HB 4065 is the result of work by the Office of Child Care Statutory Work Group over the interim. It does a number of things addressing child care licensing. Among the most important things, it prohibits a child care provider from providing care for 5 years after they've had a certification, registration, or background registry enrollment denied. Allows the Office of Child Care to have continuing jurisdiction in a case after a suspension, revocation, or license denial. Allows OCC to issue cease and desist orders, allows more people to seek injunctions against child care facilities, increases maximum penalties for violating child care facility statutes, operationalizes most provisions June 10th, 2018, declares an emergency effective on passage. There is a dash one amendment that makes a number of changes, including allowing OCC to issue cease and desist orders against individuals as well as child care facilities, and making more of the provisions operational on passage. The bill has a sub-referral to Ways and Means. At this time, we do not have the fiscal and revenue impact statements. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Excuse me, Don and Lisa. And I just want to make a comment here for the benefit of all those here. So David, I think, originally asked more than a year ago now that we work with this work group. It was a great group of people. We talked about a lot of different subjects. It's a very important topic, though complex. And so I appreciate the work group, all the people on the work group, the staff, all that you've done to get at this point. And I just think it's important that we go through and understand, because this makes some pretty substantial changes to a very important area. So I just appreciate the work that was done. And I'm only sorry that Representative Pelusa, who was the vice chair, isn't here, but she'll be here. So thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you. So for the record, my name is Dawn Woods, and I'm the child care director for the Early Learning Division, so oversee the licensing as well as the quality improvement and professional development components of child care. And I think it's important, it was really kind of reminded by Representative Bynum of that often when we come and talk about enforcement, we're not necessarily recognizing that there's a lot of good child care providers out there. And so I think the approach that we take as a division is really we're here to support and monitor programs to continually improve so children thrive. But unfortunately, there are times where that's just not an option, and we're needing some additional tools to really help us make sure that children are safe, healthy, and developing optimally in child care. And so with that, I think it's kind of some historical context that brought us to have a statutory work group was our statute really hasn't been looked at since 1972. And so a lot has changed in the world of early childhood and our state systems as a whole. And so really looking at what meets the needs of Oregonians was important to look at. And we also have been working, and some of you that were on the committee last session, some other legislation that also helped us to implement some federal laws that were passed in terms of the reauthorization of our Child Care Development Fund, which is the federal block grant dollars that come into our state for child care. And so I have been the child care director for just over 2 years now, and in the last 2 years we've been working to really strengthen our child care's enforcement system. We requested an internal audit to really look at our legal and compliance system to make sure we know how important and critical that is for the safety of children, to really look at how can we do that continuous improvement ourselves to make sure that we're doing the best we can for children. And then I mentioned in terms of some House bills, 2259, which allowed us to look at some enhanced background checks that complied both with federal law as well as some changes to better protect children. And House Bill 2260, which really had us looking at how can we be more transparent and give us the authority to provide the information that families need in order to make informed child care decisions. And one of those changes as well was that asking to have the formation of the statutory work group to really look at our statute and look at what are the enforcement actions that we can do, we should have in order to better protect children. And I do want to thank Chair Lively, Representative Peluso, Senator Gelser was on the committee, as well as a lot of other advocates and program people to really help us think through what would be the appropriate statutory authority that we need. And so I just really want to thank you for that work. I feel like Christopher covered very well the kind of the overview of the bill. And so I think I'll turn it over to Lisa, unless you want me to run through that, kind of walk through those amendments and some of those changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Don. For the record, Lisa Pinero. I'm a policy analyst with the Early Learning Division. And what I'd like to do is just walk through the Dash 1 amendments with you, because pretty much they get the original bill and they start from scratch. So I'm sticking with one document, if you will. And I'll just go by section. So if you have any questions, you know, in the midst of all of this, please let me know. So the Dash 1 amendments are something that the Office of Child Care staff has worked with Chris and with Legislative Council to get these amendments ready for you today. The Dash 1 amendments have most of the sections of the bill, but I'm just going to start with Section 1, which actually is not amended by the Dash 1 amendments. Section 1 specifies that individuals who have had their certification or registration revoked, denied for cause, or suspended, they must be removed from the Central Background Registry. This is because currently there is a loophole in the law in which if a child care provider has their registration revoked or denied, they can essentially bring somebody else into their home, and that other individual would then get the registration and be the registration holder. But that individual who was originally denied or removed or their license was revoked can continue to stay there and provide care to children. That is a loophole that we've experienced, and we would like to close that loophole. So a bill then says that if you've had your certification or registration revoked, you can no longer be in the central background registry, which means you cannot care for children other than your own children. So Section 2 then really just updates statutory definitions. And if you look at page 7, line 14, you'll see that it redefines school-aged to mean kindergarten. And this is really in response to the provision of all-day kindergarten and the jurisdiction for which the Office of Child Care has for that age group of children. So it's really just a technical kind of a housekeeping fix. I know you always love it when people say that. It's like, yes. So then moving on, unless there are questions, to Section 3. What I'll say, too, about this is Section 1 works with Section 3 and creates this legally in statute what we've often referred to as exempt prohibited individual. So Section 1, Section 3 works together. What Section 3 does is it defines what exempt prohibited individual means, and really what that means, sure, why isn't it right there? That is on page 8, line 20. An exempt prohibited individual is an individual whose certification or registration has been denied, revoked, or voluntarily surrendered, or whose enrollment in the central background registry has also been denied or removed. So we have to call them something, and so we're creating a definition of what an exempt prohibited individual is, so that Section 1 is operative, essentially. Okay. And it also, Section 3 also establishes, you know, the triggers for which an individual would be removed from the central background registry, or who we would then consider to be exempt prohibited. It's that their registration has been denied. Those are the triggers that cause that. So we really wanted to have that called out explicitly in statute, and Section 3 does that. All right, Sections 4 and 5, as you'll see, are really technical amendments. Section 4 is just establishing the statute within the statutory series. Section 5 gets rid of a definition in that particular statute that's contained elsewhere now in statute. So those are technical amendments. And Section 6 creates what Chris was referring to, the continuing jurisdiction. Currently, under current law, if an individual, if the Office of Child Care commences enforcement action against an individual or a child care facility, and that registration, the license, I'll just say license for simplicity purposes, expires or they voluntarily surrender it, the Office of Child Care loses jurisdiction. We can no longer pursue that enforcement action. So we're asking for the ability to continue and to resolve that enforcement action. It results in a lot of time that and expense that the Office of Child Care has committed to that enforcement action for absolutely nothing. So it's just one of those things that we need to, again, close that loophole. And the Dash 1 amendment in this case clarifies that continuing jurisdiction applies to individuals as well as facility licenses. The original bill was just specific to facilities, so we wanted to make that clear. Okay, so moving on, Section 7 creates the statutory provisions granting Office of Child Care to issue cease and desist orders. Currently, we only have injunction authority. Cease and desist. Injunction takes a long time to get that processed. Cease and desist is more immediate for us to take action. we can go in and say you may not no longer provide childcare. And within, I think, a 24-hour period, that cease and desist order is in effect, whereas an injunction can take up to 30 days or more.
If I might add that, we typically will see that in illegal care is where we run into not having authority to take an action on a license because the person doesn't have one, but when they're continuing to provide illegal care, so caring for more than three children.
Good, great distinction. All right. So moving on then to Section 8. I might turn mm-hmm. to you to talk about the tiered progressive enforcement system. Section 8 grants the authority for the Office of Child Care to establish a progressive enforcement system. This is a permissive. It is not a mandatory thing, and that is particularly what the Dash 1 Amendment does to the bill. It makes it permissive as opposed to mandatory. And Dawn can talk about that.
Yeah, certainly. So a lot across the nation of really looking at how are we consistent in childcare and how are we transparent to families and providers about what happens when a rule isn't followed. And I think as childcare is developing and evolving, really being able to communicate that what happens when this happens, right? And so we're looking at creating essentially a tier of enforcement. So the first violation, you're going to get cited. The second violation, maybe there's a civil penalty. So kind of based on the risk of the rule, we'll be able to create a transparent process in which our licensors will have more consistency, providers will know what the expectation is as well as the consequences, and families as well are going to be aware of kind of the, I think our goal is that it will provide kind of a better lens for parents to understand what these violations means in terms of risk of harm for children.
So then sections 9 through 11 deal with the ability of the Office of Child Care to impose conditions on a license, on a facility license. And the reason there's three sections is because it applies to certification for certified family homes and certified centers, as well as to registered family homes. When we need to, I'm going to turn to Dawn again. She can give better examples of why we would place conditions on a license.
Yeah, I mean, currently, this is really looking to give us explicit authority to be able to provide a condition. So one example might be maybe there is a koi pond in a family child care home. Some water feature. Well, we may put a condition on that license of some parameters of what that needs to look, how it needs to be secured, or how you ensure that children don't have access to that for a drowning hazard. And so those would be, that's an example of a condition that we may want to put on a license to allow them to provide care, but put in those extra safeguards.
And then moving to Section 12, this provides, adds language to our existing injunction statute that really essentially just conforms to injunction statutes across other enforcement and regulatory agencies. So it's kind of a technical fix. It's just making sure that it's conforming. And Section 13 is our civil penalty statute. Existing and current civil penalties are now set at a level which they just simply are not a deterrent. They have not been amended for many years. So we have looked at that, and again, in the work group, we discussed this, and we determined that we need to increase those civil penalties to give us the bigger stick and for enforcement and for deterring. And so you'll see in Section 13 that those maximum amounts are increased for all child care facilities. And the Dash 1 Amendment was necessary because we had some statutory language that we needed to kind of clear up and clarify some of those references. Section 14 directs the Early Learning Council to adopt rules to promote the information sharing between our agencies for in joint investigations for child abuse cases. Sections 15 through 17 specifies the operative dates for this for the bill sections, and the Dash 1 Amendment to those sections gives the the Office of Child Care a little bit more time that we need in order to continue our stakeholder outreach and conversations to prepare administrative rules for adoption and to modify some of our internal processes. So those effective dates are proposed to be changed in the Dash 1 amendments. So that is the summary of the bill and the amendments.
And I might make a couple of more comments. One, the stakeholder group was broad representation. We had quite a bit of discussion about the penalties, civil penalties, about, because this is a substantial change from where the departments had authority before. So about how far or where it needs to be in order for it to be an impediment to provide some incentive. But there was unanimity amongst the task force members that this is where it needed to be. The important thing to remember here, one of the key parts of this is the ability for the department to act much quicker instead of going through the injunction if indeed there's some risk to those children in child care. Another part of this I want to emphasize is the identification and the cooperation between DHS and this group doing joint investigations and sharing information that wasn't as much as in place before, which I think is a giant step forward. The other piece of this is information available to parents. Some of you, I can't remember how many sessions ago, well, we know we had a facility closed pretty quickly in Bend, and the next day the parents were all calling, well, what are they to do? And we know recently this happened. So there's mechanisms in here, and the department will make sure that those things, so there's more information. It doesn't stop the fact, if they have to take immediate action, their parents could find themselves without a facility. But there's a reasons why we would state to do at least that information to become available so the parents could understand it. So these are big changes, but given the importance of child care and the safety of children, are very important steps to take. So what questions, comments do members have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make a comment. It's shocking to me that it hasn't been looked at or changed since, I think you said, 1972. Mm-hmm. This is a huge omnibus bill. There's a lot of really good work that's gone into it. It sounds like good stakeholder outreach, and I'm really glad that we are going to hopefully be giving you more tools, because I think some of the cases that have come up in the news recently have been really sad, and it's our responsibility to make sure that the agency has enough tools to keep people safe. And along with keeping people safe, I always want to remember it's the carrot and stick. We want to not just come down on facilities. We want to do everything on the prevention side possible to support, because it's really hard work with very little resources to support increasing the quality. So,
other comments, questions? Representative Pelosi, do you have anything to add since you served on the work group task force?
Well, I apologize. I was in another committee testifying. Just bottom line, I want to applaud the collaboration that has made so much of this happen, and the process that we work with, again, is designed for the best of our kids and those sorts of things. And I think we do a pretty good job at doing that. But we'll continue to work on to even get things done better.
Okay, so we have one more. Excuse me, go ahead.
Well, I just also wanted to share with the committee just some other work that's going on. We have a staffing request that's going forward to Ways and Means, and as well as some requests for some funds for lead testing for our license-exempt providers who are caring for children receiving subsidy. And that a lot of this immediate ask is actually really teeing us up as we look forward to the 2019 session so that we can really address our caseloads. So part of the ask is to have three additional managers within the Office of Child Care. Our current manager to staff ratio is 1-21, which is far above the DAS recommended 1-11. And so those three positions would be an overall licensing director, which would really work to help us just increase our consistency, implement all the changes that we're making in our enforcement, as well as we have an office in Medford, which is fairly, you know, isolated, that doesn't have an actual present manager. And so creating a manager there, as well as some additional manager support. Our one staff manager has 1-37 that she's managing. So we're very much low on our kind of manager supervision, which affects our ability to really support our staff. Additionally, we're looking for three positions for some additional leadership across that carry a small caseload, and three additional compliance specialists to help reduce the caseload at least a little bit from our 1 to 150, which the national recommendation is 1 to 50, so we're three times over that. Would this ask would reduce it down to 1 to 138. Then we're also kind of in the spirit of us continuing to, while having good information sharing, which is part of the House Bill 4065, we're also looking at five positions in which we can pilot tandem investigations with DHS that will really strengthen our hearing and the information that we can gather and actually and work more quickly. Often we're having to wait to rely on other agencies to feed us information, which we might need to go to hearing sooner before their case is complete. So a tandem investigation will kind of allow us to go out and work cooperatively on that. Additionally, in February, the Early Learning Council is scheduled to adopt rules requiring lead testing for all licensed child care programs and the license exempt providers receiving subsidy. And so we are looking for, it's about $240,000 to cover the testing costs for the regulated subsidy providers. And those are the child care providers who are caring for three or fewer children in their homes. So they're not as their financial burden is much would be much greater than others. And so all in all, this the totality of this fiscal ask is right about $2 million that we'll be looking to hopefully move forward this session as well.
So it's important to understand the fiscal ask is not part of this bill. So what we need, we'll need to clarify before we move forward is why this bill has a referral to Ways and Means, because at this point we're not knowledgeable. There's a significant reason why it would be. But there is an ask that's a separate bill that's asking for the fiscal, but obviously we're not the Ways and Means Committee. We will get a chance later when under the information to understand more, because there's some other requests in that thing. But from a standpoint of this bill, this is the policy implications and not the fiscal impacts. So. Hopefully we can change the path of this bill by getting it so we don't have to refer it down to Ways and Means. Representative Kinnegar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that presentation. And as you may recall from the January hearing, I want to put in a really big plug to try to close the gap in what's recommended for the ratio beyond what you're putting on the table here. Mm-hmm. I get that it's a short session. It's very hard to find funds in the second year. I frankly would have preferred to see a more robust ask and then have Ways and our committee fight for it, because $2 million is, you know, I look at the K through 12 school budget of $8.2 billion, and I think $2 million to keep people, kids safe, and you know, why do we keep doing this? So I would advocate for more this time around, but I certainly want to send a very strong message back to the executive team when they're putting the budget together for next year, that that you all ask for the kind of funding that you need to keep kids in safe, quality, affordable child care.
Thank you, Representative Kinnegar and Chair Lively, and that's exactly how we're thinking about the 19th session.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Okay. We have one other member who has signed up, excuse me, to testify, Karen Twain.
Thank you.
The other one. Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else who wishes to offer testimony on House Bill 4065? Okay. Close the public hearing on 4065, and we'll move to House Bill 4066. I'll open a hearing on House Bill 4066. And Chris, if you'd like to.
Sure. Chair Lively, members of the committee, HB 4066 creates the Early Childhood Equity Innovation Fund. It appropriates $2.5 million for the fund, allows the Early Learning Division to use the fund for grants to culturally specific early learning, early childhood, and parent support programs. It establishes criteria for the programs to receive grants. There is an amendment which renames the fund as the Early Childhood Equity Fund. Makes an alteration to the grant criteria and makes an alteration to the evaluation of the program. There is a sub-referral to Ways and Means, and we do not have fiscal and revenue statements at this time.
Very good. So first we have three members, a panel of three. So Sadie, Mr. Lee, Pocha, And Karen, you're on this one. Thank you. And just please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sadie Feibel, and I'm the Director of Early Childhood and Family Engagement for Latino Network. Thank you for the opportunity for my colleagues and I to speak to you today about House Bill 4066 to establish the Early Childhood Equity Fund. We are grateful for your support in introducing this as a committee bill, and we hope that you will move it to Ways and Means for a deeper discussion about opportunities for funding. And just to summarize, the Early Childhood Equity Fund would set aside state funding for culturally specific early childhood programs. The fund would be intentionally flexible in terms of program model, inclusive but not limited to home visiting, preschool-like programs, and family support. The fund would be targeted to culturally specific programs developed, led, and implemented by communities of color to serve children and families in their own communities. And as was mentioned, there is a -3 amendment that removes the word innovation because really we're focused on investing in programs that exist that have demonstrated results, and really the focus is on equity, investing in equity. The amendment also identifies a factor-based prioritization for the communities to be served, and also calls out the need for culturally responsive evaluation practices. So why do we need this now? Currently, our state funding in early childhood is very restricted by statute to specific program models such as Head Start, Relief Nurseries, Healthy Families, et cetera. And while these programs are fantastic, these statutory restrictions create barriers for culturally specific organizations to access state early childhood funding. And while research supports the effectiveness and importance of services that are developed and delivered by the same communities as those being served, and we see our state increasingly diverse when we look at our under five population, we know that in five counties across our state, the majority of those kids are kids of color. And yet our organizations that are led by those same communities face these institutional barriers. So we have an opportunity here with this House Bill 4066 to establish an early childhood equity fund to demonstrate our values as Oregonians, to invest in our increasingly diverse young children, to say to our communities of color, we see you, we honor you as the experts in your own children, and we invest in your solutions. So before I turn it over to my colleagues, I just want to thank you each one more time for your support and urge you to move House Bill 4066 to Ways and Means this session where we can continue the conversation about funding. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity for me to speak with you today. For the record, my name is Lee Po Cha. I'm the executive director of the Immigrants and Refugee Community Organization with the acronym of ERCO. ERCO is a nonprofit community-based organization founded in 1976, right after the Vietnam War. We recently have just celebrated our 40th anniversary. We serve immigrants and refugees all over the world to help them integrate it into their American life successfully. Our staff speak over than 58 different languages on a daily basis. We serve individuals from early childhood to senior years. Our program focuses on early childhood, youth academic, employment and training, domestic violence, economic development, anti-poverty, community development, and language services. Why ERCO feel it is critically important to serve young children and their family, to prepare our community to overcome the cycle of poverty, healthy development is key, and educational success is a must. The years 0 to 6 are a critical time in children's development. By serving our children 0 to 6 with effective program, we address the important needs during this critical time. In this way, we address the important address we address the important time of these children. Particularly, we set them up to success successfully in their developmental stages, as well as their academic endeavor, and prepare them to live up to their most potential in life. We also set them up to contribute to our society successfully. These facts become more important to our population changes. For along those lines, I wanted to reiterate some things that data has already shown. More than 36% Oregonians are baby born in 2014 were children of color. And I think for those of us that who live in Portland, we know that when we look at the K-12 student population, it's nearly make up 50% of students of color. And so just to share with you a little bit about ERCO's experience, for more than 20 years, ERCO have provided culturally specific programming to children and parents, such as Multnomah County's funded program for the Parent-Child Development Services and the City of Portland Children's Levy. With this program, just to highlight a couple of data for you, between 2014 to 2017, 100% of parents with children with age 0 to 5 demonstrated improved knowledge of positive parenting practices, and 90% of children age 0 to 5 were tracked with developmental milestone in 5 domains. Gross motor, fine motor, communication, cognitive, and social-emotional development. These are exactly the kind of result and success that we need for our children across the state of Oregon. Yet now, state funding is not available to ERCO at the moment. While our goal, while our long-term goal must be to have all state funding be distributed to support equity, creating this Early Childhood Equity Innovation Fund is an important step, and it is the right direction. And before I close, I just wanted to also share with you that as an Asian American, I think that our children were born equal, but indeed, I don't think we were raised equal. And so by doing so, I urge you, those of you that who continue to be champions of success for our, families and children, I urge for your compassionate leadership to make sure that we're doing the right thing. And by pushing HB 4066 forward, it is doing the right thing. And I truly see that this is going to be an opportunity that it doesn't matter what race our children were born with, that we all American children will have the opportunity to thrive equally. And so with that, I thank you for the opportunity and thank you for your leadership.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. My name is Karen Twain, and I'm the Assistant Superintendent of the Tiger Tualatin School District. I've been in education for over 30 years in a variety of roles, including working at the state for a year and a half, where I was the Director of Early Literacy. At that time, our state superintendent, governor, and I proposed a plan to have all students in Oregon reading by third grade. The plan had several components, but one of the most important was the partnership we wanted to create between schools and culturally specific community-based organizations. While the bill didn't pass due to funding shortfalls, I and many of my colleagues from K-12 knew what could make a difference for our young learners. I came back to my district with that information and immediately made contact with Latino Network. We set up an agreement that they would come into one of our schools and work with that school's community of Latino 3 to 4 year olds and their families. I can tell you that we have never had a more successful program in our district with a high return on investment. I know we will continue to realize the investment's dividends over time, but here are some of the results In terms of child outcomes, 95% of the children increased their ability to recognize written letters. 100% of the children demonstrated the ability to recognize their names in writing. 95% of the children demonstrated the ability to recognize and name their first initial. 90% of the children increased their ability to recognize written numbers. And 90% of the children were able to count to 10 or higher or increase their ability to count. For parent outcomes, 95% of the parents reported increased knowledge about kindergarten. 100% of the parents report reading more frequently with their children. 88% of the parents report reading with their children at least 3 times a week. And 100% of the parents report engaging in more learning, early learning activities with their children at home. We have now added the program Juntos Aprendemos at 3 more of our schools. This year, not surprisingly, they are experiencing incredible success with their families and students. Needless to say, we would like to have this in every one of our schools, but funding continues to be an issue. We are pulling from our district general fund and trying to access grants, but there's simply not enough money to access this invaluable resource. We are in our 3rd year of the program at 4 schools and see the immediate results. We know that as we continue with our partnership with Latino Network, we will have improved graduation rates, better attendance, and stronger relationships with our families. I want to say that again. We'll have improved graduation rates, better attendance, and stronger relationships with our families. And that's very, very important. It's looking down the road, not just right now. We can literally see the 3rd grade reading benchmark within reach because of our work with this early learning program. Tiger Twalton plans to continue this important work with Latino Network and also engage with ERCO and Black Parent Initiative to further our efforts. In this light, I would like to throw my district's full support of the establishment of the proposed Early Childhood Equity Fund. We absolutely need funding for culturally specific early learning programs, and if we're serious about closing the opportunity and achievement gaps in Oregon, this is the perfect starting place. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Members of the committee, have any questions for any of these members? Thank you, and a thank you all for the work you have done and are continuing to do on behalf of the children. It's very important. We appreciate it. Thanks for your time. Yeah. So we have 6 other people who have signed up to testify. So I'll call up the first 3. So we have Gladys, Cecilia, and is it Anna Livia?
Yes.
Again, if you'll just please identify yourself for the record and then offer your testimony or your comments, I'd appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and representatives of the committee. My name is Gladys Alvarado, and I work for Latino Network's Early Childhood Services and Family Engagement as Program Support Specialist. So I want to start off by saying that I firmly believe that culturally specific programs are necessary for our community because parents have a space to share and come together without fear of being judged. Children prosper and expand their knowledge and skills in their native language and do not feel alienated or left out because they are different or they come from different backgrounds. There is a sense of community, and stories and experiences are shared that can potentially help families overcome their or avoid obstacles that impact many children of color due to the lack of resources they have to ensure academic success. Parents feel that they can engage with their children academically and support and encourage them through their journey. And children know they can succeed because even before they enter kindergarten, they have developed a sense of school routine, expected behaviors, and knowledge. I have firsthand experienced these benefits with my family. I was 7 years old when my mom and sister started participating in Juntos Aprendemos, which is part of the early childhood services at Latino Network. I started kindergarten the year before, and I knew no English. I didn't know numbers. No colors. I tested below average on all assessments in my first couple of years of school. I struggled, and the journey was not easy for me. However, the story is very different for my younger siblings that have participated in the program. They academically excelled. One of them is in her freshman year of college at Lewis and Clark College and is thriving. The other 2 are in high school, one right on track for graduation, ready to start college, and the other researching some of the top colleges and universities universities to apply to so she can pursue a degree in law. What made all the difference between my siblings and myself is that because of Juntos Aprendemos and the tools that they received, they're more involved in their education than before, even before they started grade school. They entered kindergarten with the knowledge they needed. My parents always there to support and guide them, whether at home or at school. And some of that even rubbed off on me. And I was the first one in my family to graduate college this last fall with a bachelor's in social work. And it was because of that support that I received from the tools that my parents had learned. The program has also benefited my family in our cultural experiences. We have been able to keep our language alive, as well as keeping our values and our traditions as part of our identity, and along with a strong bond and communication in our family, thanks to what Juntos Aprendemos has taught us. Now, almost 16 years later that we started the program, my family is still part of Juntos Aprendemos. My mom is has been one of the program coordinators for the last 12 years, and I am part of the support of the program. We had the opportunity to give back and what we learned to the families who are starting out just like we did, just like the rest of our team does, since we all started as participants and volunteers, which is really unique of our program. Juntos Aprendemos not only motivates, empowers, teaches, and encourages families in academic success, but also to form strong cultural values and roots within their communities. We need more programs like this, like this one for all communities. Our children are our future. They can make the world a better place or a worse one. And I don't know about you all, but I prefer the first option. So thank you.
Thank you.
That was fabulous. That was fabulous. My name is, good afternoon, Chair Lively and committee members. My name is Anna Olivia Palazzo Angulo. I'm the executive director of the Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality. And we've been, let's see, at 3850 Portland Road, Northeast. And my phone number's on the paper that I gave you. The Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality has worked for 18 years on culturally specific programs with parents to increase education outcomes for Latino children from Spanish-speaking immigrant families. That's been our focus. As you may know, we have the largest population of Latino and Spanish-speaking and immigrant families in the entire state of Oregon. Over twice as many as Portland. Most of our programs are unique. Most of them we've created with the help of consultants, teachers, and educators, all Latino and Spanish-speaking educators. And our programs are called Promising Practice. Promising Practice was what we were praised for by Governor Kitzhaber, Rob Saxton, Rudy Crewe, Nancy Golden, Salam Noor, and others in ODE. We worked with them for years. Promising Practice was what we were assured that would be a priority for the Early Learning Council, but that's not materialized. We've only been able to get small contracts with Early Learning Hub, which is wonderful, and Salem-Keizer Schools, only for evidence-based parenting programs. There is no evidence-based parent-led preschool programs. Mm-hmm. And parent-led anything, there's no evidence-based national program. We believe in parents. Parents can do this work for us and with us. So it leaves the most important programming we do out. A parent-led program such as the one we have in kinder and first grade is 20 eager Spanish-speaking moms and dads coming to classes for 10 weeks in which they learn to teach their child literacy and reading skills to catch them up with their white peers in kinder readiness, first grade, and second grade. We see huge success. Moms and dads are thrilled to be able to help their children succeed, and children are catching up and moving toward third grade reading benchmarks at a much faster pace than their Latino peers not in our programs. In addition, our Equinox Northwest studies are showing, which we've started 3 years ago, are showing that in the last 3 years, the children of the parent participants that we have in all of our programs has reduced their chronic absenteeism rates by one-half to two-thirds, less than their peers. So Our preschool program we've piloted twice. It's Aprendiendo Avanzamos, Learning Together We Advance. So this is a parent-led preschool that we modeled after our kinder, first, and second grade reading literacy intervention. Our parent-led preschool combines parenting, preschool activities with each parent and their own child. And right now, because of lack of funding, we can only do 10-week sessions. All parents are asking for more. The last one, we had 25 parents and more knocking on the door, and we couldn't fit any more in. We are considered the best recruiters in Salem as far as Latino immigrant Spanish-speaking parents, and they flock to all of our classes. They have their own values. They don't want to send their children on a bus to Head Start, and I say they very broadly because we're not talking about, in this case, we're not talking about parents who work. A lot of our moms stay home with their children. At the age of three, they're not sending their children to childcare all day, at least our first generation, you know. And they don't want to send them off on a bus. We also have Head Start stories here. Up until very recently, all of our Head Start programs had a very hard time finding Spanish-speaking Head Start teachers. We have fully 50% of every child in this city under the age of eight. 50% of them are Latino. So about half of those are ESL. And they were going to Head Start in English with white teachers. And the kindergarten teachers in about 20 schools that have bilingual programs were like, I don't know if the children would be better off without going to Head Start at all. They come in here so confused. So this is not helping. Now they're working really hard on it, but as you may have heard, getting Latino Spanish-speaking staff here, it's very difficult to get enough. So our district is 40% Latino, and we have 6% staff or teachers, you know, and so it's very difficult. Finally, this bill was proposed, and I'm really excited about it. We're a culturally specific organization led by the communities affected. And as I said, we have longitudinal studies starting that we are going to be able to show the reading success after we work this way. And I believe that Oregon cannot do real education reform and get Oregon out of this bottom five, you know, reputation without us, without the parents, the community organizations that are culturally specific, and these promising practice programs that you're hearing about. I really don't think year after year after year, education reform is not going to do this by only figuring out what to do with the kids after you take them out of their home. It's just not going to happen. Having parents be teachers at home, as everyone uses parents as teachers as the phrase, they can only teach what they've learned in their own life to be able to teach. My family, all my kids were reading before I got to school, before they got to school, and me too when I was little. I'm the executive director. I'm not Latino. I'm one of the few people in the organization that's not Latino, but I've been immersed in the community for over 20 years. So that's what's happening there. Anyway, learning to teach while the kids are playing is something that they never knew. And the moms that we talked to thought that three-year-olds should not be going to school. That's a burden that they shouldn't be doing. They should be playing. I remember when we used to think the same thing. In the 60s, I don't know if you remember, but it was a huge outcry about making kids go to kindergarten. They're too young. They need to play. They shouldn't be stressed. So these are all just shifts in culture and an understanding that the parents and the family at home, that's where it's at. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Hola, muy buenas tardes. Gusto en conocerles. Gracias por este tiempo que me están permitiendo. Mi nombre es Cecilia Díaz.
Good afternoon. Nice to meet you all. Thank you for the time that you're sharing with me. My name is Cecilia Díaz.
El día de hoy quiero hablarles de un programa que conozco, que se llama Juntos Aprendemos y que es parte de los programas de educación temprana.
Today I'd like to speak with you about a program that I know called Juntos Aprendemos that is part of early learning programs.
Las familias descubren en Juntos Aprendemos un lugar en donde los pueden entender.
In Juntos Aprendemos, families discover a place where they are understood.
Porque hay otros padres que cuentan sus experiencias parecidas a las que ellos han vivido.
Because there are other parents there who share their experiences that are similar to what they have lived.
Esto hace que los padres sean constantes en la asistencia, aprendiendo cómo apoyar a sus niños desde temprana edad.
And this makes parents very constant in their attendance so that they can be learning about how to support their children's learning at a young age.
Y esto a su vez ayuda a que los niños amen aprender.
And at the same time, this helps children learn to love learning.
Eso fue lo que yo encontré en Juntos Aprendemos como mamá participante.
That's what I found as a mother participating in Juntos Aprendemos.
El programa de Juntos Aprendemos no solo impacta a la mamá que está participando, también impacta al esposo.
Juntos Aprendemos doesn't only impact the mother who's participating, it also impacts her husband.
Es porque ellos ven los cambios que la esposa está haciendo.
Because they see the changes that their wives are making.
Por ejemplo, leerle a los niños todos los días.
For example, reading to their children every day.
Usar comunicación positiva con los niños.
Using positive communication with their children.
Dedicarles tiempo de calidad.
Spending quality time.
Hablar con ellos de su cultura en su idioma.
Talk to them about their culture in their language.
Esto ayuda a crear en los niños una identidad cultural positiva.
This helps to create a positive cultural identity in their children.
Y también les ayuda a tener interés en la educación.
And helps them become interested in education.
Y esto garantiza que los niños lleguen a la universidad.
And this guarantees that our children will make it to college.
Una cosa que hace diferente a Juntos Aprendemos.
One thing that makes Juntos Aprendemos different.
De otros programas.
From other programs.
Es que nos da la oportunidad de crecer profesionalmente.
Is that it gives us the opportunity to grow professionally.
En mi caso, comencé participando como mamá con dos de mis hijos.
In my case, I started participating as a mother with two of my children.
Eso hace 10 años atrás.
That was about 10 years ago.
Y ahora estoy dando mentoría, apoyando a otros padres en su desarrollo.
And now I'm a mentor, supporting other parents in their development.
Ayudándoles a sentirse cómodos abogando por sus hijos.
Helping them to become comfortable advocating for their children.
Hablando de su cultura.
Speaking about their culture.
Y a sentirse listos para que ellos mismos puedan apoyar a otros padres a crecer.
And to become ready so that they themselves can then help other parents to grow.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Oh, questions?
Thank you again very much. We have three more members who have signed up to speak, Tanya, Ashley, and Jenny. Might remind members, there are a couple other testimonies in OLIS. Okay. We have a letter from the League of Women Voters and a couple other testimonies there in there. So.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. My name is Tanya Hunt. I'm Executive Director at Children First for Oregon. Children First represents the interests of 880,000 kids in the state of Oregon and believes that together with our communities and leaders like you, we can build a state where every child thrives. Beginning in 2015, Children First has worked with partners, now over 100, to identify legislative proposals that will help achieve the vision of our kids thriving in this state. The Children's Agenda, many of you are familiar with, well, the first time in 2018, we've identified priorities amongst our partners, and I'm thrilled to say that one of our priorities is House Bill 4066, the Early Childhood Equity Fund. I'm here today to ask for your support of the Equity Fund. We know that although high-quality early education is crucial for children's futures, across Oregon, only 42% of 3- and 4-year-olds are enrolled in preschool. But really, more importantly, 75% of low-income children, including many children of color, lack access to high-quality early education. You've heard about some of these great programs across our state, culturally specific early learning programs that are currently serving our communities. But at this time, these wonderful programs, these culturally specific programs that fill a vital need in our state, are not eligible for state funding. They have a proven track record, and we know that they work. I'm here today to urge you to allow investment in these proven programs to support the culturally specific early learning and parent support programs. It's imperative that we do everything we can to level the playing field for our children. We ask you some support of House Bill 4066, establishing the Early Childhood Equity Fund, to target these investments and to begin to bring equity for children of color and make Oregon a place where all children thrive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Lively, Vice Chairs, and members of the House Committee. For the record, my name is Ashley Oakley, and I'm the Early Childhood Policy Advocate and the Early Learning Program Evaluator for the Native American Youth and Family Center. We provide culturally specific programs and services that guide our people in the direction of personal success and balance via cultural empowerment. I am writing today, or speaking today, to voice support for the Early Learning Equity Fund. The Native American Youth and Family Center provides something to our community that is missing from standard early learning programs. As the internal evaluator for our early learning programs, I collect data from both the families of our program participants, from our teachers, and also from our program leaders. Many of our families report their children having similar experiences of deep belonging, confidence with their culture, and comprehensive, and many parents say this, circles of support. Parents speak of the NAIA Head Start students as having the confidence to really speak up and express their Native American heritage proudly and being excited about it. Unfortunately, we had to give up our Native-specific Head Start and Early Head Start programs to another community-based organization recently. We were not able to secure enough funding to run the program. One mother asked me to read a letter that she wrote. Delilah first became involved with NAIA's early learning programs when she was just 1 year old. We met a NAIA advocate at the Delta Powwow, and she brought books and games to my daughter while we were in treatment. Our advocate continued to support my daughter and I when we finally got our own apartment, and Delilah loved the home visiting program, parents as teachers. She also loves the Applegate Head Start program even more. The Native classroom was trauma-informed, culturally responsive, and not only respectful of our cultural identity and education, but it honored it as a resiliency factor. Due to the lack of funding, the Native American Head Start Delilah attends is being relocated out of Northeast Portland. After so much time establishing trust with the teachers, the family advocate, and all of the other parents, we have to start all over again with another school. My heart drops from the anxiety of having to leave my daughter with strangers who may not understand our culture. The community is how we keep our culture alive in an urban setting, and our community is being disbanded by the lack of funding for our culturally specific early learning programs, and it hurts. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our successes and struggles and our hopes for the future. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Lively, Vice Chair Bonham, Vice Chair Peluso, and members of the committee. My name is Jenny Lee, and I am the Advocacy Director at the Coalition of Communities of Color. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today in strong support of House Bill 4066. The Coalition of Communities of Color is a coalition of 19 culturally specific organizations dedicated to cross-cultural collective action for racial equity. Our mission is to address the socioeconomic disparities, institutional racism, and inequities of services experienced by our families, children, and communities, and to organize our communities for collective action, resulting in social change to obtain self-determination, wellness, justice, and prosperity. This bill fits squarely within our mission. Today, we've heard many powerful examples of how culturally specific early childhood learning transforms the lives of children, families, and our communities. And these folks have said it much better and with a great deal of power. So I would just like to highlight the coalition's strong support. Many of our member organizations offer high quality specific early learning programs and services and could be eligible for this spending. These programs, as we know, they result in strong academic outcomes for our children and communities. House Bill 4066 would address a critical gap in our current early learning system and develop ways to support programs that equip children with the skills that they successfully need to enter kindergarten.
Oregon's growing diversity means that this is a particularly important time to begin investing in the future of all of our children by meeting their cultural and linguistic needs. We must ensure that culturally specific stakeholders are formally incorporated into our state's early learning system, recognizing them for the important role that they play in supporting families and closing the opportunity gap for children of color. The contributions of the organizations that you've heard from today and many who are not in this room will greatly enrich and strengthen our early learning system statewide for all Oregonians. On behalf of the Coalition of Communities of Color, I urge you to take action to ensure that every child in Oregon receives a strong start in life and help to identify new opportunities for children who would most benefit from these high-quality, culturally specific early learning programs that could be supported through the Early Childhood Equity Fund. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Is this the last panel on this?
Mm-hmm.
Can I offer a comment, Mr. Chair?
Certainly. Right ahead. Thank you.
I'm not short on comments right now. I just want to say how I visited the Applegate program. It's a fabulous program. Clearly, this is not a job to you all. There's a lot of passionate testimony. And again, my comment with about the child care, looking at a couple million dollars into child care for this, a $5 million program compared to the billions we put in through K-12, and knowing how many of those kids are kids of color that have a variety of reasons, whether it's language, poverty, racism, lack of access to housing and other kinds of things because of racist policies we've had over decades, a whole variety of reasons that have put them at a disadvantage that we need to be very targeted in how we recognize and try to overcome that. So I think a $5 million fund, half of which I think you're asking for, because there's only 1 year left in the biennium, is a really teeny step in the right direction. Again, I think it's pitifully small compared to all the billions of dollars that we allocate out of this building. It's a good start. Love to see it higher, but I fully, fully support it.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Is there anybody else who didn't sign up that would like to offer some testimony, please?
Chair Lively, members of the committee, my name is Christine Vogel. I'm with the League of Women Voters, and it is my privilege to be our education policy coordinator. I have an opportunity to look at everything from early learning through K-3, those later years in elementary school, junior high school, and follow also the programs in this building in higher education. I highly commend this program. You've got our written testimony on file. You know, as we follow youth through the system, that youth of color have lower graduation rates. They have higher absenteeism rates. They are often disciplined in a disproportional manner. And there are many other negatives that these children and youth face as they go through the system. It is a strengthening aspect to our very solid early learning programs to also offer culturally specific programs, and we highly support these. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anybody else? Thank you all who provided testimony today. Since this is a fiscal ask, once we have all the paperwork completed in that, it'll be moved to Joint Ways and Means to be considered with other bills. I'll close the hearing on House Bill 4066. Anything else to come before the committee today? Oh, sorry. Oh, we have to do that. Okay, so, both of these bills will be carried over at least to the next meeting, and then we'll decide at the next meeting from a standpoint of what the paperwork's ready in that, what we'll do with them. But they'll be carried over to the next meeting for consideration of a work session. To move the bills on. Thank you, Chris. Anything else to come before the committee? Thank you all for your attendance today. I look forward to Thursday. More important business. Thank you.